Okay, good morning, everybody, whoever is listening on Zoom. And we're now in the home stretch before Pesach. I hope that does not panic anybody. We've been discussing for a number of weeks the mitzvah recounting the Exodus. Today we're going to start with another mitzvah. And this is a mitzvah d'oraisa, and that is the mitzvah of eating matzah. Leil Pesach, the first night of Pesach, eating matzah. Again, if you look at the Seder is a conglomerate of many, many different mitzvos that you're doing. Some of the mitzvos are Torah laws, and some of the mitzvos are rabbinic laws. And some are not even that, some are only have the status of time-honored minhagim, which are also important. So let's enumerate, b'kitzur, what are the Torah laws that you fulfill Leil Seder? Now, some of them are not unique to Leil Seder, but they're done. Number one, Kiddush, the recitation of Kiddush. Now, Kiddush is not miyuchad to Seder. Kiddush is something you do every Shabbos and Yom Tov. But it's worthwhile to think about this. Is the recitation of Kiddush a Torah commandment, or is it not? So on Shabbos, it is vaday a Torah commandment, because the fourth commandment of the Ten Commandments says, Zochor es yom ha-Shabbos l'kadsho, remember the day of Shabbos to keep it holy. And Chazal's understanding of remembering Shabbos is the obligation to recite Kiddush. So Kiddush Leil Shabbos is a Torah commandment. The interesting question is, what about Kiddush Leil Yom Tov? Meaning, is the Doraisa only Shabbos and Yom Tov is rabbinic? Or is there even a Doraisa on Yom Tov? That's a machlokas. There is a big machlokas if the Kiddush of Yom Tov is Torah or rabbinic. But this year, it's rendered moot, because this year, Leil Seder, I'm incorrect. The Leil Seder is mostly Shabbos. Sorry, you would have the same Shabbos. I was going to say, when the Seder is Friday night, which it actually can't be. The first Seder cannot be Friday night. No, it can be. Yeah, the first day of Pesach can be Shabbos. Yeah.
It's been Saturday night.
Yeah, that's correct. So when the first day of Pesach is Shabbos, so the first Seder is, or the Seder is Friday night, then the Kiddush for sure will be Doraisa. This year, when the first Seder is Motzoi Shabbos, there'll be a Machlokas, is Kiddush Doraisa or not. Okay. Birkat HaMazon is Doraisa. But again, that has nothing to do with Seder, that's simply because you had a meal. But in terms of the unique Pesach mitzvos, let's go over this. Reciting Yitziat Mitzrayim is a Doraisa. Haggadah, the Haggadah to Levincha. Eating matzah is the Doraisa. A mitzvah the Doraisa. Men and women are equally obligated. Eating maror, this is an interesting question. Now the Torah does say you shall eat matzah and maror. So maror is normally the Doraisa. However, the difference is, we paskin that after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, only matzah is the Doraisa, and maror is midrabana. Why? Because maror is only mentioned in the Torah in conjunction with eating the Korban Pesach. When you eat the Korban Pesach, you shall have matzah and maror. The implication is, when you don't have a Korban Pesach, there is no obligation to eat maror. And eating maror today is zecher lemikdash. Now the Gemara asks, so say the same thing for matzah. Matzah is also mentioned in connection with the Korban Pesach. But the answer is, for matzah, there's an additional pasuk, be'erev tochlu matzot, the night you should eat matzah, in which it is not connected to Korban Pesach. So the bottom line is, matzah is da'oraisa, maror is midrabanan zecher lamikdash. The drinking of four cups of wine to commemorate freedom is midrabanan. Okay, so summarizing it all, the recitation of Haggadah is Doraisa. Now again, when I say Doraisa, I don't mean the actual text of the Haggadah. That's a rabbinic thing. But the idea of some narrative of the Exodus is the Doraisa. Matzah is the Doraisa. Maror bizman hazeh is midrabanan. And Dalet Kosos is midrabanan. By the way, let me just make a simple observation about Dalit Kosos. You have to understand something about Dalit Kosos. The mitzvah of Dalit Kosos is not only the drinking of the wine, but it's the recitation of portions of the Haggadah over a cup of wine. By that I mean, the first cup, you must recite Kiddush over a cup of wine. You must recite the Maggid over a cup of wine. You must recite Birkas HaMazon over a cup of wine. You must recite Hallel over a cup of wine. The reason why I say this is important is this. You will notice that every Haggadah will instruct you. Let's say, for example, after the four questions, it'll tell you, fill the second cup. Now, you may wonder, why do I have to fill the second cup? I'm not going to drink for another hour. So I'll just say the Haggadah, and when it's time to drink a second cup, I'm going to fill the cup. No, that's not correct. The Haggadah's instructions are very correct. Because it is not enough just to pour the cup and then drink it. You have to recite the Maggid over a cup of wine. And therefore, when it tells you to pour the wine then, you pour the wine then because you must recite the Maggid over the wine. By benching, the same thing. You pour the wine before benching, so that benching is recited over a cup of wine. After benching, after you open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi, you're going to say Hallel. You pour the cup of wine and say Hallel over wine. So this is a very important idea, that Dalit Kosos is not only about drinking the wine. Dalit Kosos is about recitation. And in fact, let me give you an example. It may be, I'm not giving you a psak halacha, that if I recited the Maggid without a cup of wine in front of me, when it's time to drink the wine, I'm not yotze, I'm going to have to recite the whole Maggid again. Pour a cup of wine and recite the Maggid again. In fact, the briskers have a chumra that it has to be the same cup. The cup that you drink has to be the cup of recitation, which would mean the following. Let's assume that I have a cup of wine and I recite the Maggid, and then the cup spills and I got to pour a second cup. I'm not yotze by drinking that second cup. I got to recite the whole Maggid again on that second cup, because the kais which you drink for the Dalit Kosos must be the kais upon which you recite it. Okay, so now this is actually a bit of a complicated issue, because one might argue that although every one of the participants has to drink the four cups of wine, but the obligation to have a cup upon which there's recitation is only on the Baal HaSeder. So it might be that if my wine spilled, or I didn't even have a second cup till it was time to pour it, but the Baal HaSeder had a cup upon which the Maggid was recited. So it could very well be that that inyan, your Mekayim, just like by Kiddush, right? One person says Kiddush, so the Amira ala Kos could be done by one person. So that's an interesting question. But I do want to point out that part of the mitzvah of Dalit Kosos is recitation over wine and not simply the drinking over wine. But be it as it may, though, the Dalit Kosos is midrabanan. It is not d'oraisa. Fascinatingly enough, everyone knows the reason for Dalit Kosos, but I'll mention that in a moment. But that is not mentioned in the Babylonian Talmud. In the Babylonian Talmud, which is the authoritative Gemara, the only reason that's given for the four cups of wine is simply because we have four mitzvos that the rabbis wanted you to do with the simcha of wine. Kiddush, Haggadah, Birkat HaMazon, and Hallel. In other words, it's simply there are four mitzvos of recitation, and Chazal wants you to do those four mitzvos over wine because wine is a sign of simcha, wine is a sign of cheiros. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, hey, that's not the reason I learned for Dalit Kosos, you are correct. That is not the reason that you learned for Dalit Kosos. The reason that you learned and I learned, all of us learned, even as children, if we learned this as children, why there are four cups of wine, is because of a pasuk in Parshas Va'era, when Hashem promises Moshe, He's going to redeem the Jewish people. He uses four terms of redemption. Hotseisi eschem, I will take you out. V'hitzalti eschem, I will save you. V'ga'alti eschem, I will redeem you. V'lakachti etchem li li'am, and I will take you unto me for a nation. These are called the four lashonos of Geula. And Chazal, again, it's rabbinic. Chazal enacted the four cups of wine, keneged the four lashonos of Geula. That is a very familiar reason. But the thing I want to point out is that the Gemara does not give that as a reason. And the source of the idea that the four cups of wine are connected to the four lashonos of Geula is a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi. It is not the Bible. So now we know that when there's a machlokas between the Babylonian Talmud and the earlier compiled Jerusalem Talmud, halacha usually, in the vast majority of cases, favors the Bavli over the Yerushalmi. But this is an interesting example where the most common reason that is given for the four kosos does not appear in the Bavli. It appears only in the Talmud Yerushalmi. In fact, let me mention another halacha, which only appears in the Yerushalmi and not the Bavli, and yet it's a well-known halacha that the Shulchan Aruch paskens by. See, in the case of Dalet Kosos, the Yerushalmi is not changing a din, it is simply giving you another reason. But now I'm going to give you an actual halacha that is based on the Yerushalmi. We know, as I said, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to eat matzah the first night of Pesach. How much matzah we'll talk to. Not as much matzah as people think they have to eat, but there's a mitzvah to eat matzah. Now, just as there's a mitzvah to eat matzah, there's actually a prohibition to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. You're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. Now, some people have a minhag, it's a minhag. They stop eating matzah either Rosh Chodesh, Nisan. And some people even have a minhag that they stop eating matzah from Purim 30 days before. But all of those are chumras, all of those are extra things. The halakha, however, says you're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. Now, the isra of eating matzah on Erev Pesach kicks in even before the isra of eating chametz on Erev Pesach. Because on Erev Pesach, I also have to stop eating chametz. Now, I stop eating chametz after 4 hours. Right? One third of the day, after 4 hours, I stop eating chametz, whatever time that is. Meaning, 4 hours in halacha is always, these are always proportional hours. Meaning, essentially, it's one third of the day, whatever time it'll be. I have to look at the calendar. But 11 o'clock, whatever time it's going to be, you're not allowed to eat chametz. Matzah, you're not allowed to eat from Amud HaShachar, from dawn. So actually, it is mutter to eat chametz longer than it is mutter to eat matzah. And what is the reason why you don't eat matzah Erev Pesach? What's wrong with matzah and Erev Pesach? So Chazal say, this is the Yerushalmi, not the Bavli. The Bavli does not even have such an issue. It says, anyone who eats matzah on Erev Pesach, it uses a bit of a colorful metaphor, ki'ilu bo'el arusasai b'beis chamiv. It is as if he had intercourse with his betrothed while she is still in the house of her father, his father-in-law, chamiv is. Now, what's the idea? That in the time of the Torah, now again, don't confuse this with modern Hebrew. In modern Hebrew, the word arusa just means an engaged woman. But in the Lashon of the Torah, marriage was actually two stages. There's the ring ceremony in which she is actually married, but she would still stay in her father's home for up to a year. And then they would have nisuin, which is consummation. Today we combine erusin, which is the ring ceremony, and nisuin, which is the yichud and the symbolic consummation. Now, when a woman is an arusa, she is his wife. She actually is his wife. But they're not yet allowed to be together. So here is what it is. Even though he and his wife will be permitted, but if they do it too early, they're jumping the gun. So eating matzah on Erev Pesach, the Talmud Yerushalmi says, is exactly the same thing. It will be a mitzvah in a few hours, but it's like jumping the gun. It's like being with a man being with his arusa before the time has come. Now, that doesn't give you the reason for it. It just tells you that it's forbidden. But the reason simply is that we want you to eat matzah with enthusiasm and gishmak. So you separate eating matzah for a while so that you'll approach it with a certain enthusiasm. We have a similar halacha on Rosh Hashanah. During the month of Elul, we blow shofar every day, but we don't blow shofar on Erev Rosh Hashanah to make a hefsek between the optional blowings and the mandatory. We want to make a hefsek between the optional eating of matzah and the mandatory. There's another reason. Yeah.
I'm just curious, what about chocolate-covered matzah?
Right, so we'll talk about that in a moment. So let me just point out that there's another reason why we compare eating matzah on Erev Pesach to being boel, having intercourse with arusa, the Beit Chamiv, in his father-in-law's house, and that is that in order for an arusa to be permitted, there have to be the Sheva Brachos, meaning after the year, they would recite Sheva Brachos then, and that would permit the Kala and the Chasam to be together. Until Sheva Brachos are recited, they're not allowed to be together, and even after a year. Sheva Brachos is a condition. I don't mean the 7 days, but the seven brachos are a condition. This is a famous phrase. A kala without the brachos recited, asura labala kenida, she is as forbidden to her husband as anida. So, the same way the kala becomes permitted to her husband only with sheva brachos, so too matzah becomes permitted to us only after we recite seven brachos. Now, this is going to be a little difficult. So what you have to come up with is, you have to come up with the idea that before I eat the matzah at the Seder, there are seven brachos that I recite. That's the comparison to kala. Matzah is like a kala. A kala needs seven brachos before you can be together. Matzah needs seven brachos before you can eat it. So let's see if we get seven brachos. I think we'll be a little bit of a trouble here. How many brachos do we recite at the Seder before we get to the matzah? So let's see. We have Borei Pri HaGafen of Kiddush. We have Mekadesh Yisrael Vazmanim of Kiddush. We have Shechiyanu for Kiddush. So that's three. Then we have Borei Pri HaAdama on Karpas, which is four. Then we have at the end of Magid, we have the bracha Goal Yisrael that God redeems. That's five. Then we have Borei Pri HaGafen on the second kos, which is six. Then we have Al Netilat. I'm only counting brachas. Al Netilat Yadayim. That is seven. Then we have Hamotzi, which is eight, and we have Al Achilas Matzah, which is nine. And then you eat the matzah. So l'chora, we have nine brachos that we recite before we eat the matzah. So why does the Yerushalmi say it's only seven? So there are a few different approaches here, but the simple approach is we're not counting hamotzi and al achilas matzah because, in other words, you're ready to sit down with the matzah after seven brachos, but then you got to say the regular brachos that you say on both bread and on the mitzvah, right? So basically the way we would formulate it is, you're not ready to sit down with your matzah until you have recited seven brachos, and then you're going to say hamotzi, and you're going to say al achilas matzah. Now, you're not counting the last two, because they are what you're saying when you're already engaged in the matzah. So that's a fascinating dimyan, fascinating comparison, that the reason why the Talmud Yerushalmi says anyone who eats matzah on Erev Pesach is as if they had intercourse with their arusa in his father-in-law's house, because just like the arusa is not muteret labala until there are sheva brachos, so too the matzah is not muter to you until you've recited Sheva Brachot. Okay. So now, and I'll get to your question because this is connected. So this does create actually a big problem, especially when Erev Pesach is Shabbos. And that's this particular year, is that right? Because the Seder is Motzei Shabbos, yeah. Because the problem is this. You can't burn chametz on Shabbos, right? Obviously. So, you don't want to have a lot of chametz around because you can't, some of it you can flush in the toilet, etc. But, you can't get, so we're assuming that almost everybody, if they have sense, if they're sane, are going to be Pesach there before Shabbos, okay? So the question is, you have to have three meals on Shabbos. And when you have three meals on Shabbos, you have to have chametz, at least for two of them. The Friday night meal and the Shabbos morning meal has to be hamotzi. Suda shlishit, there are different leniencies. Some say you could be yotze with fruit or fish, whatever it is, but at least the first two meals, Friday night and Shabbos, they've got to be hamotzi. So the question becomes, what do you do? So Friday night, at least theoretically, you could either have bread or matzah. It's going to be your choice because the issur of eating matzah doesn't kick in until the morning, and bread is still permitted as well. So you could choose, depending on your minhag. If you don't eat matzah from Purim or from Nisan, then you can't have matzah. But Friday night, you can have bread. And obviously, you have to have bread, but you have to handle it kind of like nuclear material. Great deal of caution. Be sure that the crumbs don't spread. Have it on a paper plate. And conserve all of the crumbs. In other words, all the food should be Pesachtik. All the other food should be Pesachtik, and you'll have a special paper plate. People recommend pita is very good because pita has fewer crumbs than challah, so that's probably a good idea to have pita. Oh, no, so I'll get to that. That's going to be a biggie. Okay. Now, what do you do about Shabbos morning? So Shabbos morning, you have an additional problem because, number one, Shabbos morning, already you cannot have matzah. You cannot have matzah. The only question, now theoretically, you could have bread until 11, whatever, again, I don't remember this man, but whatever this man is. So theoretically, therefore, we would advise you to have your suda early, be finished by the whatever the time is, and you could have bread, and that bread, again, would be pita, right? The matzah, regular matzah is out. The question becomes, is there another alternative that will be a little easier? That is the issue of egg matzah. So let me explain what the problem of egg matzah is. When the Torah describes matzah, the Torah describes matzah as lechem oni, the bread of affliction, the bread of poverty. Chazal have an interesting drasha, and that is that in order for matzah to be kosher for the Seder, it must be poor, meaning to say it must be bereft of any flavorings other than flour and water. And if matzah has eggs, or chocolate, or honey, or oil, or all of them, that is called, that's given a name, that is called matzah ashira. And matzah for the Seder must be poor matzah. It cannot be rich matzah. Therefore, even if a person has difficulty chewing, there is no way they could use egg matzah to fulfill the mitzvah of the Seder, because the mitzvah of the Seder requires lechem oni and not matzah ashira. Now, here is the trick. The very stringency that matzah ashira is not valid for the Seder has a leniency. And the leniency is the following idea. When the Talmud Yerushalmi says you're not allowed to eat matzah, Erev Pesach, and that starts from the morning, the only matzah you're not allowed to eat Erev Pesach is a matzah that would be kosher for the mitzvah of the Seder. But a matzah that is not kosher for the mitzvah of the Seder is not within the prohibition of eating an Erev Pesach. Therefore, egg matzah, which is not kosher for the Seder, because it is matzah ashira, can be eaten on Erev Pesach. Now, Let me explain another complication. So therefore, egg matzah might be a good possibility. Now, here is the thing. The Gemara, the only thing the Gemara says about egg matzah, actually it doesn't say egg matzah, matzah ashira is what it's called. The only thing the Gemara says about matzah ashira is you can't have it at the Seder because it's not the bread of affliction. So if I would just learn the Gemara and I would ask the question, am I allowed to eat egg matzah the rest of Pesach? Or can I even eat it at the Seder if I'm yotzei my mitzvah with lechem oni? The answer would be yes. There is no iser of eating egg matzah other than you're not yotzei the lechem oni. So that is the sheet of Sfardim. Rav Yosef Karo in the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins, matzah ashira is mutar to eat on Pesach, and the only thing is you're not yotzei the Seder with matzah ashira. That's Sfardim. However, the Ramah brings a chumrah. I think everyone here is Ashkenazi, right? I don't know who's listening on Zoom. So Sfardim eat matzah ashira on Pesach. They eat kidneys, which is another thing. They eat matzah ashira on Pesach. But the Ramah brings a minhag of Ashkenazim that not only do we not eat matzah ashira at the Seder, we don't even eat it Pesach at all. Why is that? It's a chumrah. It's really a chumrah. It's not from the Gemara, but the theory would be that we're afraid that maybe it became chametzik. Why is that so? Because although normally when you mix flour and water, it doesn't become chametz until 18 minutes. That's why all matzah is baked within 18 minutes. But maybe when you add fruit juice or egg yolk, maybe, at Ashkenazim we're always looking for chumras, maybe it accelerates the fermentation process. Maybe, and therefore we avoid it, even during Pesach. That's why you'll see, in Eretz Yisrael in particular, you will see, just like for kidneys, it'll say, kosher lepesach li'ochlei kidneyot. Right, rice cakes, or whatever, popcorn, whatever it'll be. You'll also see, for example, cookies that are made with flour and wine, and really it's a type of egg matzah. It's kind of Israeli egg matzah, which is a little different than American egg matzah. And it'll say kosher levnei Sfarad or kosher le'idut ha-Mizrach and the like. Don't be confused here. These are two different leniencies that Sfardim have. They are absolutely not connected at all. One is they were never makabel, the minug of not eating kidneys. That's a separate thing. The other is they are makel on the eating of matzah ashira. Ashkenazim, we happen to have both chumras, but again, they're not connected. Don't confuse them. We have this chumra about rice and corn, which is a separate thing, and then we have the chumra of the Ramah that we don't eat matzah ashira because we're choshesh that the addition of these other ingredients may accelerate the chimatz. That is why you will notice, well, this is a famous thing. The Ramah says, since this is only a chumra, so for a chole, for a sick person that has difficulty chewing, or a zaken, maybe doesn't have teeth, or for children, we allow them to eat matzah ashira, and you're even allowed to keep it in your house. So we're not really treating it like chametz. You're allowed to keep it in your house, but even a chola or zaken is not yotzei at the Seder. So the machlokas Ashkenazim and Sfardim. Sfardim eat matzah ashira. Ashkenazim don't eat it, but they're allowed to keep it, and they could feed it to a chola, zaken, katan, but nobody is yotzei at the Seder. So even if a person is without teeth, what he has to have is he has to maybe eat matzah meal, ground matzah meal, and you know, take a spoon of that and take it down with water, but egg matzah will not be valid for the Seder. Now, that is why, you know, this is a famous, I won't call it a scandal, a little too dramatic, but the old matzah factories, a lot of them are gone now, right? I mean, Horwitz Margareten, I think, is gone. Manischewitz, I haven't seen, I haven't been in America. Manischewitz, I think, is still around. Streit's, I think, recently closed. These were the big three famous matzah companies and also Pesach companies generally. But the old matzah companies used to have on the box, they would make egg matzah. And that includes chocolate covered matzah, which is egg matzah as well. And they would say something like, in Hebrew letters, Ayin, look at the Shulchan Aruch, Semen, Tuf Ayin Aleph. In Hebrew, it would give you a reference to the Shulchan Aruch. Now, you open up the Shulchan Aruch, and it says, don't eat this for Ashkenazim. Now, they didn't want to put on the box, don't eat this unless you're old or sick or whatever it would be, because people wouldn't buy it. So they gave you a Hebrew reference to the Shulchan Aruch. It's like, you know, it's like having a pack of cigarettes that refers you to see the Annals of Internal Medicine for 1962. You look at it and says, causes cancer, right? But they didn't want to put it directly on the box. So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, who was the Zichrono Lebracha, who was the Rav HaMachshir of Streit's, he insisted that they put in English, this product can only be consumed for Ashkenazi, Jews. This product can only be consumed for cholem, for sick and elderly, and children. Right? And since then, I think the matzah companies now followed his lead on that. But the old matzah boxes only had it in Hebrew. And even in Hebrew, they didn't say it was usher. They just gave you a reference to the Shulchan Aruch. Now, most people see Hebrew letters, even if you're not an educated person. You see Hebrew, you figure it's another hechsher. It's like, you know, this is glot kosher matzah, or whatever it would be. No, that's very nice. It's very nice. But you'd be surprised. There are anti-Semites and there are conspiracy theorists who look. I mean, they look at OU, OK. They know it, and they say, "Oh, Jews are taking over the world." And they see all sorts of sinister, conspiratorial. No, but no matter what, they look at it and they say, "Oh, you know." Do you know what the OU represents? The Union of Orthodox Rabbis are taking over, you know, the world by controlling the food supply. And, you know, they'll actually make a whole big deal of all of this. Well, it is matzah, but it's not lechem oni. And it does have a different taste, number one. It does taste differently, a different consistency. So it's like eating a flavored cracker. It doesn't have the same thing. Now here's the thing, though. So let's assume, so if you're Svarti, life is very, very simple. You can have egg matzah all of Pesach. So if you want to eat egg matzah for Shabbos lunch, go ahead and do it. Perfectly fine. For Ashkenazim, it's a little complicated because here is the problem. If the Chumrah of the Ramah is that we treat egg matzah as chametz, that actually means, even if it's a Chumrah, you got to stop eating. You still have to have your meal early, meaning whether you're making your lunch based on pita bread or you're making your lunch based on egg matzah, you still have to finish by 11 o'clock. Svartim would not have to finish. Again, I'm using 11 o'clock. I don't know what time it is. Why? Because we treat egg matzah like hummus. But you don't have to be concerned about crumbs on the floor, because egg matzah you're allowed to keep. In other words, so egg matzah would still be preferable to pita or to bread, because with bread, it's not only the eating that I'm worried about, I'm also worried about crumbs, because I'm not allowed to have chametz in my possession. Egg matzah, I'm allowed to have in my possession, so I can be careless, meaning the fact if my kid carries the egg matzah into a bedroom or whatever it is, and even if he crumbles it and there's a piece of egg matzah on the floor, even though the chumrah is, I don't eat it, but there's no bal yera'ed, there's no possession. So the point I want to make is that in terms of when you have to stop eating the egg matzah, that'll be the, if you're Ashkenazi, that'll be the same as the time you've got to stop eating chametz. Because we do treat it like chametz. But we're again, it's an inconsistent thing. But we're makel that you're allowed to own it, you're allowed to have it. If it's scattered around your house, it's okay. So memela, I think there's less anxiety with egg matzah because you're not worried about the crumbs and the pieces. Yeah.
I have a question. I don't know why in my head, I remember learning at one time that egg matzah you made a mazonos bracha.
Okay, so now this gets us into a Hilchos Brachos question, and that is, what bracha, let's say during the year, and then we'll talk about Pesach for a moment, what bracha do you make on a piece of egg matzah? Now, well, first of all, what bracha do you make on regular matzah? So here too, Sephardim and Ashkenazim have different customs. Sephardim actually treat matzah as a cracker, which it really is, and they'll only make a mizonos, except on Pesach, when matzah becomes the bread, and they make a mozi. Ashkenazim.
Make a mozi all week long, or only after the Seder?
No, I think the whole week, because it's the only bread you can have. Ashkenazim do treat regular matzah the whole year as a bread item, and they will make a mozi. Now, some say that only applies to a big matzah, meaning the matzah crackers. Some will treat that as mizonos, even like Ashkenazim, because it's just crackers. But at least a piece of matzah is hamotzi. Okay. Now, what about egg matzah? Now, egg matzah, once again, is matzah that's mixed with egg, oil, chocolate, honey, all sorts of different ingredients, different types of egg matzah. So here, the truth of the matter is, even for Ashkenazim, egg matzah is treated like a type of cake, and the bracha would be mizonos, unless you are making it the foundation of a seuda. And when you make it, that's called kviyas seuda. When you're koveya seuda on egg matzah, then it becomes hamotzi. And that's true for Ashkenazim and Sephardim. So you're correct. If I'm simply eating egg matzah as a snack, either during Pesach or during the year, I would make a mizonos. If I'm koveya my seuda on the egg matzah, it then becomes hamotzi and birkat hamazon. Okay? That's similar to pizza, same thing. I don't want to get into those complications. You know, if you're just having one slice of pizza, a casual snack, it's a mizonos, but when you make it your main meal, that's a very complicated sugya exactly, how does something become a meal, but when you make it your meal, it gets upgraded on pizza to hamotzi and birkat hamazon. Egg matzah is the same way. So as a result, it would seem that there is no shaila for either Ashkenazim or Sephardim that they could make their meal, Shabbos lunch, on egg matzah. Except the only difference in Ashkenazim and Sephardim is how soon would I have to finish with eating that egg matzah. Sephardim would not have a problem in going on past the Zman of Isur Chametz. Ashkenazim would have to stop eating. They don't have to stop the meal, but they would have to stop eating the egg matzah by that particular time. Okay? Yeah. So here's the issue. I mean, if you're just talking about intermarriages, if you're simply talking about husband and wife, so generally wife takes on husband's menhagim. Now, if you're talking about being a guest in somebody's home, so there's a few things. I mean, you know, and a Sephardi needs to be sensitive to this. You know, the same way, if you had a food allergy, you know, I would not give you food that you're allergic to. I should not give you food that, according to your minhagim, you don't eat. So, if you're a guest in a Sephardi home, under no circumstances are you allowed to have kitnios. But we are makel on non-kitnios food that was cooked in kitnios pots and pans and dishes and cutlery. So as long as if I'm an Ashkenazi guest in a Sephardi home, as long as I am not eating the kitnios themselves, I do not have to be concerned. Now, that itself is a leniency, because, for example, let me give it, in my own home, I should be makri even on kalim. For example, a lot of baby formulas are kitnios, are rice or soy based. Now, I'm allowed to give kitnios to my baby, but I have to wash the bottle in the bathroom sink, meaning I'm not supposed to use my Pesach dishes for kitnios. So in my own home, if I'm an Ashkenazi, if I'm keeping kitnios for a sick person or for a baby, I do have to have separate kalim. But when I'm a guest in someone else's home, I don't have to be machmir on the kalim and the cutlery. So kitnios for sure I cannot have, and I can't have egg matzah either. So I got to, you know, the Seder is not going to serve egg matzah anyway.
What about if they cook with kitnios oil?
Okay, so all right, so maybe we'll give a whole shiur on kidneys. I mean, kidneys is actually a complicated halachic area because there's machlokes about every part of kidneys. First of all, there's a big machlokes which things are kidneys. Rav Moshe Feinstein tells us that when he was a child in Russia, one of the big treats they would serve on Pesach were peanuts.
Right.
Now, today, he said, not peanut oil, peanuts themselves. So Rav Moshe apparently held peanuts were not kidneys, and you were allowed to eat them. Now, I can tell you 100%, this is absolutely not the case today. But there's another machlokas about the oil of kidneys, meaning even if kidneys are forbidden, did the rabbis make this gezerah on the oil of kidneys? Now, many of you might remember a time when peanut oil was one of the oils that was kosher lePesach. And that's based on the idea of shemen kidneys. However, modern hashgachas have tended to move to the right, like a lot of aspects of Judaism. So presently the OU, for example, I believe, I'm pretty sure, does not give any hashgacha on peanut oil. And that's why you're left with olive oil and canola oil too, because canola comes from, what's it called? Rapeseed? Not grapeseed. It's rapeseed or rapeseed, whatever it is, which is technically kidneys. So you're left with cottonseed oil, which is very, very unhealthy, or olive oil, which is a little better.
They have walnut oil.
Okay, there might be different types of nut oils. The nuts that you can eat is not a problem. Right. So shemen kidneys is a machlokas. Shemen kidneys. And a third machlokas is, which is involved for Diet Coke, is kidneys shenishtanu. What if a kidneys underwent chemical changes? Mm-hmm. For example, artificial sweeteners, aspartame, which is used in Diet Coke and Coke Zero and the like, actually is derived from corn, but it's processed and chemically changed. And the question becomes, does that become, that's why you may recall hearing that some people held that there's no such thing as kosher lePesach Diet Coke. Now regular Coke, the B'davka is, and in fact, those who are expert in Coke, even Goyim, like to buy Coca-Cola around Pesach time. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because the whole year Coca-Cola is, I'm talking about regular Coke, is sweetened with high fructose corn syrup.
Right, so not Pesach.
But Pesach time, they gotta switch to sugar. Because high fructose corn syrup is the chol hapachos kidneys. So the mevinim know that this is the old, because remember, the original Coke was a lot of sugar. Sugar is a better sweetener than corn syrup. So the mevinim, the goyim, they'll buy a whole lot of Coke around Pesach time because they want to get the sugar rather than the high fructose corn syrup. So regular Coke, that's kosher lePesach, is for sure good. But Diet Coke is a problem because the aspartame or whatever they use does come from a corn derivative. But many poskim say that the Machshir of Coke, Rav Landau from Bnei Brak, takes the position that because the kidneys underwent chemical processing, it's no longer kidneys. So there are many, many machloksim. What is kidneys, number one? Oil of kidneys, number two, and kidneys that underwent chemical transformation, number three. So going to your question, what if the Svardi cooked in peanut oil or kidneys oil, even if you're given non-kidneys food? Well, once again, I think that, frankly, you need to make your needs known. I mean, you need to, I mean, listen, people are embarrassed, but you know, you're not embarrassed to say you have a food allergy. And if you're not embarrassed to say you have a food allergy, then you shouldn't be embarrassed to say that I have a halakhic requirement. And hopefully things will work out.
This is similar but different. We had one time a brother and sister who asked my son-in-law if he could come for the Seder, you know, with his sister. He didn't tell us that they don't eat gebras.
Yeah.
And there was nothing they could eat.
Yeah, that's right. That's an issue. Yeah, you're right. And once again, You know, just like there's an acharias on a host to accommodate a guest, there's an acharias on a guest to give the host advance notice as to what the special needs
are. That taught me that if I'm having a guest for any time, to ask them, is there anything you're allergic to or anything you don't eat, so I'll know ahead of time and not...
No, that's very appropriate. You know, guests have responsibilities too. they need to clarify. But the point I'm making is that, you know, you shouldn't be ashamed to talk about what your halakhic requirements are. Again, these are not like chumras. Now, maybe, you know, well, heter mechira might be an example. You know, if somebody is serving heter mechira food for Shemitah and you don't hold a heter mechira, so there may be a basis that once you're a guest, you can be lenient. As long as I'm in Paskin, I could be at someone's house and eat their heter mechira Shemitah stuff. So there may be things that you don't have to impose on your host. But kitnios and gebraks, these are really real minhagei Yisrael. So those you need to make clear that those are your approaches. Now let me just mention one. And we'll talk about there's much more to talk about here, but I just want to mention one other thing. So we've talked about the Friday night meal, and we've talked about the Shabbos morning meal. So hopefully you have an understanding of how that works. What about Su'udah Shlishit? What about Su'udah Shlishit? Now Su'udah Shlishit is eaten at a time. The earliest it could be eaten is afternoon, mincha time. You know, you don't have to daven mincha, but it's already time for mincha. So at this point, chametz is off the table. And matzah is off the table. Theoretically, you could have matzah ashira for suda shemishit. But there's another problem that kicks in. And that is 3 hours before the Seder. Now this is relative hours.
So Shosimanios.
You're not allowed to have a Sa'uda because that'll take away your appetite. So you will not be allowed, even for Sfardim and Kal v'chomer for Ashkenazim, you will not be allowed to have Matzah Ashira after that time. So Ashkenazim already couldn't have Matzah Ashira from the Zmanis or Chametz. Even Sfardim are not allowed to have Matzah Ashira from the last time. So if you're Sfardi, you can make Suda Shlishit on Matzah Ashira, but you have to have it before the last 3 hours of the day. If you're an Ashkenazi, Matzah Ashira is already forbidden. Regular matzah is already forbidden. Regular bread is already forbidden. So you would have to, well, there are a few choices. Either your Yotzei Suda Shlishit with fruit, a little meat, a little fish, potatoes, hard-boiled eggs, which you are allowed to have in the last 3 hours. Or, some would say, you can divide your lunch in two before, in other words, before 11 o'clock. Before 11 o'clock, remember, this is very important, before the Yitzhar of Chametz, what you do is, you know, you make Kiddush, you make Hamotzi, whether it's on egg matzah or whether it's on pita, whatever it is. Regular matzah is already Yasser. And you eat some matzah, maybe have a piece of gefilte fish. Then you bench, take a walk, leave the house, take a walk around the block, come back, wash, and make hamotzi again. Again on pita or egg matzah. This would have to be before 11 o'clock. And that way you've made your lunch into two meals. But halachically, some people don't like that because you're having Suda Shlishit before Mincha time. So they recommend that you do that, but in addition, have some extra meat or fish or egg in the afternoon. So, in other words, what you're doing is you're doing two imperfect things, hoping it adds up. Meaning to say like this, ideally, Suda Shlishit should be on a Hamotzi Mincha time. It's impossible to do both of those things because by the time Mincha time comes, there's nothing I can make Hamotzi over. So what you do is, you have a Suda Shlishit with a Hamotzi, that's too early, and then you have a Suda Shlishit without Hamotzi, that's the right time. So you got in the right time and you got in the Hamotzi, but the two didn't come together. So you actually have two little Suda Shlishits. By the way, there's also a Shaila, if you are splitting lunch, I gave you an example where you just had the fish first and the whole meal after. Some people say you got to work the opposite way. Some people say that the lunch meal has to be more chashuv than the third meal. So that would actually mean the point at which you bench would be after you finish most of the meal, and then you just leave over a little bit, maybe dessert, for Sudash Lishi. So there's also a question of what point do you insert the Birkat HaMazon. Okay, so those are some interesting shilas that you need to be aware of. It's interesting that how certain shilas become very important to people, even though they neglect it the whole year. I mean, many people, unfortunately, are not that meticulous about Sudash Lishi on a regular Shabbos. They don't pay attention to it. They don't have it. When Erev Pesach comes on Shabbos, like everybody in the world asks, how do I do Sholos Shudas? Like, oh, I mean Sholos Shudas is a chiyuv indeed, but it's no more of a chiyuv Erev Pesach than it is the whole year. But somehow everybody gets fixated on this interesting shah, maybe because intellectually it's an interesting shayla. Sholos Shlishis, what about Sholos Shlishis, right? So they talk about these different solutions. Okay, take care and be well.